Blackwater, The Wagner Group, Executive Outcomes, The Flying Tigers, The Swiss Guard, The White Company, The Knights Templar, The Varangian Guard, Clercus of Sparta, Pythagoras the Spartan, Mentor of Rhodes, Socrates of Achaea. The list is endless. Mercenaries, guns for hire, soldiers of fortune, private military companies, private security contractors, dirty deeds done not so dirt cheap. History is replete with privatized militaries. Call them what you want. They have been around for a very long time, and they are very likely not going away anytime soon. And like it or not, wars are good, very good, for business. Furthermore, history tells us that more people are enslaved and killed by such means as greed, corruption, oppression, and tyranny than by any other means. So choose the red pill, remove your blinders, all of them, and take a good sensory inventory of what you're being told and shown to believe. Because here we go. Welcome everyone to another episode of Aconis, The Contractor's Life. Speaking from the relatively bucolic rural foothills of northwestern Washington State, I'm your host, Scott Dresser. This is the third episode in season four. So some of you might have noticed that there's a slight change in the full intro in this podcast, and it's been brought to my attention by a number of people that, yeah, they really like it, but anyway, so long story short, shorten that a little bit. Here we are. Going to pick up where I left off in the previous episode and conclude it fairly quickly and transition in to the segment where I go back to Afghanistan. So with that said, I mean, there's with the WPS program, I've done the best I can to try and give you an idea of what it's like without divulging a lot of stuff that I'm not supposed to, because I'm still beholden to that NDA. And even if I wasn't, there's probably a lot of stuff I shouldn't be talking about, and certainly not in any great detail. But that said, let's move forward with it. And I thought I would throw this in because I was watching the news earlier. And, you know, I've known this, and I remember it when I'm talking in this podcast, but I forget to bring it up, especially in this WPS portion of it. But Border Patrol, when I was down there, so this was, you know, so I went through it 2011. We graduated from the class that year. I want to say it was December when we graduated. I don't remember the exact date. I can look back at some of the certifications that we got. I think they're dated. But we were, for some reason, we were given those certifications, with the exception of the ERT certification, which we got, I want to say, the last couple of days. But we basically got everything about a week before we wrapped up, so about the time we began the ERT stuff. And but there was Border Patrol out there because it was brought to our attention by the instructors and the trainers not to venture out in certain areas or go beyond a certain range when we were out there unless we were accompanied and or escorted by them or with them, whether it was the driving instructors or the PSS instructors or whatever. And I won't go into any details or divulge anything, but some of you reading between the lines might be able to figure out why they wanted to be with us if we went beyond a certain area. But there was Border Patrol there. I don't remember the exact reasons why. I know that when we were doing helicopter stuff, they had access to helicopters, and at least one or two of these Border Patrol guys were friends with some of the instructors and trainers, and they had a lot of good information and stuff that they shared with us, and so it was really very helpful. And at first, a lot of us were really surprised, like, Border Patrol, what the heck? But it also turns out, probably, knock knock, that they were probably also helping watch our six while we were out there doing all the stuff that we were doing. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there and shout out to any Border Patrol guys. You have a thankless job, probably more thankless than what most people consider cops, law enforcement type people. Anyway, with that said, so we're doing all this stuff. We're in the ERT phase. That's a wrap. I mean, we get that taken care of. We get our certifications. We finish up our final paperwork. We bug out. We go back to Arizona. We drive there. 2 or 3 hour drive to the airport there. It's probably closer to 3 hours, maybe 3.5. We stopped at McDonald's on the way. I do remember that because we got up really early and I was really hungry. We all were, but anyway, so we get to the airport, we go home, we do our thing. Like I said before, I don't remember, I want to say it was January or February the following year when that investigator came in to my place and interviewed me, and we talked for quite a while. And probably it was January, now that I think about it, because I remember getting my clearance notification of somewhere in the month of February. So with all that said, there were a lot of reasons. Most of it was contractual stuff. Things had changed dramatically, both in how things were going to evolve and work when we deployed downrange, as well as contract terms in terms of pay and other stuff and how many days we were going to get paid. Same thing with training. And had some stuff going on, family issues, you know, with dad being gone, you know, an average of 3 months at a time, and then home for about a month. You know, we had children in school, middle school, and I think at that time, one of them was still in elementary. So long story short, my dad was in the hospital. He passed away in the hospital. It was the month of February. Complications to knee surgery. So there's just a lot of stuff going on. My wife was beside herself. So long story short, I took a break. I resigned from that program. And then reality hit. And it's kind of like, okay, we got to get back to work. So I did. I reached out, or recruiters reached out to me, whatever it was. I don't remember exactly how that panned out. But I ended up going back to Afghanistan with a company by the name of Blue Hackle, which is not the only British or European company that I'd worked for. And I had, I thought about it a little bit. It's like, do I really want to work for a British company? But, you know, whatever. They were great. It was a great company to work for. Had a few hiccups along the way. It wasn't all peaches and cream. It wasn't exactly a bedding flowers of roses. It wasn't exactly that. But it did turn out to be a very good working relationship. There were a lot of hiccups along the way. I think I've touched upon some of that in previous seasons. And I'll go into detail as much as I can in all of that with my tenure with Blue Hackle, which was the last company I worked for when I went back to Afghanistan and spent my time there. I would say roughly 2 years or so, 2.5 years. And then, so I don't remember the exact month I got there. I want to say it was March-ish, when I got there. And, it was an interesting trip. Let's just put it that way. At the airport, met up with the guy. I was given a heads up that there was another dude that was going to be on the same flight as me. We were going to be on the same team and, you know, look out for him and one thing or another. So we met up at a cafe there at the airport and flew in to Afghanistan there in the Kabul area. And I'd been in that airport before, so I kind of knew my way through and around. We were able to slip through the security screening stuff. And when I say slip through, it's not like we bypassed it or didn't go through it. Just that there were some formalities that we were able to get passed through beyond without having to officially release stuff. Anyway, so we get to where we're going, basically the HQ for the company there in Kabul with the program manager, country manager, I guess. Met him. As I recall, he was a retired colonel. And so this was like a day or two later. Me and this guy, we go into his office, and he's kind of briefing us on what to expect and one thing another when we make our drive to where we're going there at Bagram, which is where we're going to go later in this season with this. But so we're talking with him, and he's telling us some stuff, and we're kind of glancing at each other going, uh-oh, this doesn't sound good. And it was basically the guy that the company, for whatever reason, chose to be the site security manager for where we were going. And at one point, the guy that I flew in with says something to the effect like, so do you want us to take care of him? And he said, no, it wasn't that bad. He just said, look, the guy's got an interesting resume. And so once we got to where we were going, we figured out what that meant. And so when I heard that, anytime thereafter, I immediately knew there was something not right about the person. For whatever reason, they slipped through the cracks. Somebody picked them and put them on the project for who knows what reason. So we get there, and so, you know, we do what we do there for a few days, admin stuff, just making sure that everything's clear. We're being vetted by these guys. As I recollect, we drove from the Kabul area to Bagram. We get there, and I think some of you who've been paying attention or following this podcast for a while probably have heard this story before, so I'll try not to tell it exactly the same. But it was roughly an hour, somewhere between an hour and an hour and a half, before the site security manager actually rode in to the airport where we were at. So we probably actually flew in, now that I think about it, on like a private charter thing. And we've been communicating with this guy. This guy knew we were coming. He knew what time we'd be there. But he's always giving us some bullshit excuse in the text messaging why it's taking him so long to get there. So, you know, we're already got a really bad taste in our mouth with this dude. And long story short, he does finally show up. And, at first measure, when we first saw him, it's like, oh, okay, well, we'll give him a break. Then the conversations ensue, mostly at his behest as he's talking. And I'm sitting in the back seat. The guy flew in with us in the passenger front seat. He's asking him about the tattoos, and the guy has no reason why he got the, he has no idea why he got the tattoos. He says he doesn't even like them. They were all Jewish tattoo stuff, and it's like, well, why'd you even get them? And I don't, anyway, and he's talking like he's some hardcore special forces dude. Turns out he never served in the military. Was never a law enforcement guy. Really had, the only background he had was in construction. And he claims to have been on a security team during Hurricane Katrina there in the NOLA region. Okay, New Orleans, Louisiana stuff. You might remember that back around 2006, 2007, all that stuff playing out. He showed me some Facebook stuff that I call fake book at this point, for reasons I won't elaborate right now. But, and I'm looking at it and I'm researching this guy because we'd been with him for a month or two, maybe three, and we've just about had our fill with the guy. And we're looking for reasons to try and get rid of this guy because rumors are circulating rabid rumors about this guy. Long story short, we finally get the skinny on him by reaching out to a number of people that we know. Primarily, I was in charge of, the guys asked me to lead the charge to find the dirt on this dude. We found it. Long story short, his first rotation out was his last rotation out. We got word from HQ there in country that, yeah, when he goes on his journey, I think he was going to the Philippines, wherever it was, and he was really looking forward to it. He's going to get his Dear John letter. Never saw him again. Whew! Solved. Taken care of. And as I've said before, we had, I want to say, three site security managers. None of them worked out. One of them I actually liked. I think he was the third one. He was a retired sergeant major, and I believe was Army. We actually got along pretty good. And I thought he was a good dude. He certainly knew how to meet people and make connections and get conversations rolling. and I thought he was going to be good for the company, good for the project, and good for everything. The guys didn't like him because they thought he talked too much. I'm like, well, he's a sergeant major. What do you expect? You know? But anyway, then the thing that drove these guys nuts, and to me, it was like, so what? It's true or it's not. And if it's true, wow. If it's not, so what? It's a great war story. But they got bent out of shape because he was telling them a story that they relayed to me, and which I talked to him about, and he told me, and it was like, God, that's a great story, whether it's true or not, with him doing an offhand rifle shot. So he was right-handed, so offhand means he was shooting with his you know, you could call it weak hand shooting. With his M16, As I recollect, it was something on the order of a 600-yard shot. He said he actually hit the dude. And it was a great story, the way he told it. And I'm like, okay. You know, and I'm like, why are you guys getting so worked up? Who cares? Either it happened or it didn't. Okay? But anyway, so then we had a site security guy. I guess the guy that came in next was, he was okay. I mean, he wasn't bad. We got along. But again, he was a chest thumper. He was braggadocious and went out of his way to make everybody realize that he was better and more special than us. And he, just like the first guy, was fond of reminding us that he's the site security manager and would pull out his identity card and say, see, it says right here, site security manager. Because we were a relatively small team and we were basically working 7 days a week. And if he would just come and help out a little bit, because the client wanted him there, especially during the surge when the locals were coming in as we're booking them in and then checking them out. And none of these guys wanted to do it. The third guy was there. He at least made a presence. He wasn't always there, but at least he made an effort. I'm just saying, working overseas as a private security contractor is not always as exciting and as glamorous as it's made out to be in books and in movies and videos. You do have your moments. You do get that adrenaline rush. Sometimes it happens quite frequently, and there were a number of those incidences there at Bagram, which I will go into in later episodes. So for now, that's a wrap for this episode of Aconis the Contractor's Life. I want to thank you and everyone for taking time out of your day, afternoon, or evening to listen to me talk about private security contracting, primarily overseas, as well as some of my experiences as a private security contractor here in the States. Thank you to my wife, for whom I owe immeasurable gratitude. Thank you to my family, my friends, and all the people, male and female, who have been and still are part of my life. Remember, folks, it takes a team to get anything done. The grass is not always greener on the other side, no matter what you've been told. Be careful what you wish for, because you might just get it. Stay humble, stay safe, and keep others safe by being aware and staying frosty. And until next time, keep it real.
Aconis the Contractor's Life extends a special thank you to music composer Kava Cohen and to Colin Perry of Ninja Tracks for allowing Aconis the Contractor's Life the use of Kava's song, Heavy Clutch, from the music soundtrack to the game Forza Motorsport 7. And also a big thank you to Andres Rodriguez, who can be found at the Fiverr website, for his excellent original music scores.